the Faith and Science Podcast. My name is Tyler Bublitz, and welcome back to the Liturgy of the Palms, or the Liturgy of the Passion, for the week of March 24th, 2024, and I'm excited to have you here. I'm excited to dig into this week's podcast. Where did Lent go? We are entering into that last final week here of Lent, and it's kind of that stretch. It's that difficult stage, and I think it's also that stage where the reflection hits a little bit deeper. It hits a little harder because of what we're going through this next week, with having that you have this kicking off Sunday, and then by the end of the week, you could potentially be having Wednesday night for a Holy Wednesday, Monday, Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday, depending on if your congregation does that, and along with then getting Easter. It's just a lot of church, but a lot of deep reflection as we are heading into the high holiday within the church year. So it's a lot going on that way. But before we get into that, we need to look back at last week's question, which was, what in the world do many people see as insignificant that you see as super significant? And for me, I think there's a lot of different responses that you could have with this. One of them that we got back that I thought was great is the voices, ideas, opinions of children, and how often they are typically overlooked. I would 100% agree. I think it's one of the things where it's that whole reminder of what we get in Matthew of let the little children come to me. The idea of how much we can learn from the children, I think, is something that is super important for us to be thinking about and considering. But I think there's also just the subtleties and little things of the rotation of seasons, where you have birds coming back in the spring and noticing that, being observant of their migration, even the night migrants, being observant in the summer of those cool breezes as you're watching the world warm up and how the temperature changes throughout the day, to the simple things of the fall where you get the rustling of the leaves of that are a different sound than in the summer, those rustling leaves of when they are starting to die and get into the state of falling, and then the wind bringing those or whipping those around, to the final stage of those cold, bitter winds, or even just the sounds of different birds being in the area, or just the lack of noise, the quiet of snow falling, and how eerily quiet you can have an area be. I think it's noticing and being observant of a lot of these different things, like we talked about last week, I think is super important. But in order to do this well this week, we have a lot of texts and a lot of passages to get through, so let's just jump into it. We're going to start with the Liturgy of the Palms, which then we have a couple different readings. The psalm this week for that would be Psalm 118, verses 1 and 2, and 19 through 29. This is a psalm of recognition of first beginning with the steadfast love that God has for us, and then us recognizing that we are welcomed into this righteousness. We are welcomed into this place of forgiveness through the grace of God, and recognizing what Christ did, that the rejection of the chief cornerstone, the idea of how Jesus was rejected for our sake. So this idea of how marvelous it is of what God through Jesus did for us in order that we might be welcomed into this. There's also a lot of gate language within this psalm, which relates to where we'll be going with the text, the gospel text for this section of the liturgy. So there's two different gospels that you can potentially have for this. The first one being Mark chapter 11, the first 11 verses of it. And this is almost a more detailed version than what we'll get here later. But Jesus is approaching Jerusalem at Bethsaida and Bethany, and he tells his disciples to go into the village. There will be a colt that has never been ridden. And if anybody asks, say that the Lord needs it and to bring it here, they go, they find this colt, bystanders ask that, they let them take it. And when this happens, they start throwing cloaks on there, they start preparing this donkey, this colt, and Jesus then rides in, and people are taking leafy branches, laying them on the ground, and spreading their cloaks on the ground as well, and they are shouting, Hosanna, blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord, and he gets this triumphant entrance into Jerusalem. Blessed is the coming kingdom of our ancestor David. Hosanna in the highest. It's this welcome of worthy of a war hero coming into Jerusalem through the gates. The other alternative gospel for this Palm Sunday is then John chapter 12, verses 12 to 16. There's a crowd that gathers. They start putting down palm branches and shouting, "Hosanna, blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord, the King of Israel." Jesus is found on a young donkey, and it is written, "Do not be afraid, daughter of Zion. Look, your king is coming, sitting on a donkey's colt." And this is the beginning of Jesus being glorified, that this is the process that the disciples remember this part of scripture later on after the death and resurrection, which we're getting into next. The liturgy of the Passion, there is a lot to go through here. So we're going to start with the Old Testament text. First reading is out of Isaiah chapter 50, verses 4 to 9a. This is this recognition that the Lord has given this person the tongue of a teacher, Isaiah, the tongue of a teacher, that we should be open to the ears of what God is saying. And then this is where we start getting things that start sounding familiar of what Jesus will go through, and starting in verse 6. "I gave my back to those who struck me, my cheeks to those who pulled out the beard. I did not hide my face from insults and spitting. The Lord God helps me, therefore I will not be disgraced. Therefore I have set my face like flint, and I know that I shall not be put to shame." This idea of how things are getting difficult, things are getting hard, yet it's the Lord is the one who is the one who will vindicate and will declare whether or not this person is guilty, not of human descent. The psalm that goes with that is Psalm 31, verses 9 to 16. This is a distress. And we get it right in the beginning. "Be gracious to me, O Lord, for I am in distress. My eyes waste away from grief, my soul and body also. The sorrow, the scorn, the adversaries who are dreading this person, rejecting this person." And yet we get in verse 14, "But I put my trust in you. Through all this terror, through all the stuff that is going on around me, I put my trust in you. My times are in your hands. Deliver me from my hands of my enemies and persecutors." The epistle text or second reading is from Philippians chapter 2, starting at verse 5 through 11. This then, especially because you can tell this is after the crucifixion, we get a little bit more insight here, but it's that mind of what Christ did for us. The recognition of God taking on the form of Jesus and going to the point of being a slave, but not just a slave, but emptying himself, as it puts in verse 7, the process of emptying oneself to death on a cross, the worst way and most gruesome and horrible way that we have thought of killing in probably humankind. Thus being exalted through this process, that because of what Christ did, that we should honor God and be in closer relationship and be able to confess that Jesus Christ is Lord through the glory of the Father. The gospel text this week is out of Mark, and there's a couple ways you can handle it. There's Mark chapter 14, verse 1 through the end of chapter 15 at verse 47. Or you can go to Mark 15 and go the first 39 verses and optionally 40 to 47, depending on how you want to do it. But this is the whole story here. So if you start with starting in chapter 14, it's the beginning of the Passover, and they are telling the people, his disciples, to go and get this table for what we would know as the Last Supper. And it's this instructions on where we will be and what they're looking for, and they get there. But as this is happening, Jesus gets anointed with this ointment. And there's questions then from people saying, could this ointment not be used for something else? It's 300 denarii, which is a few hundred dollars. So there's some decent value there. Couldn't it be given to the poor? And Jesus is kind of stating, no, there's a point where we want to lavish the people who are in front of us and make sure that they understand this. You don't know how long you'll have each other. And again, you can hear in that response, Jesus's mindset has shifted already. Then we get into the beginning of the Passover feast and the beginning then of what we have of Holy Communion, starting in like verse 22, the taking the loaf and breaking it, saying, "This is my body," and taking the cup and drinking it, and "This is my blood. This is a covenant for many." And it is then out of this that we start having that there's going to be someone who deceives. Peter says, surely not I. This is where then Jesus states, before the cock crows twice, you're going to deny me three times. Peter is in doubt about this. They go out, they go to Gethsemane to go and pray, and telling his disciples to stay awake, he keeps finding them asleep, and he's asking for the Father if there's any other way to remove this cup. Otherwise, we realize it's what you want, not what the human or Jesus wants is personal, the human side. Then the betrayer comes, Judas, one of the 12, has him arrested from the crowds. Then he goes to the high priest. The high priest is kind of trying to find some fault. They're having these different accusations. Nothing's really sticking. The high priest finally turns to Jesus. Do you have no answer? You realize asking Jesus if there is an answer. Jesus doesn't have an answer. The high priest responds with, have you no answer? Do you not realize what I can do for you? And finally, they get to the question from the high priest, are you the Messiah, the Blessed One? Jesus responds with, I am. You will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power, coming with the clouds of heaven. And the high priest then gets to the point where the only thing that they can really say is, fine, he is blaspheming against by stating that he is the Son of God. And that's as much as we can say. And at the end of chapter 14, this is where we have Peter denying Jesus and knowing Jesus three times before the cock crows. And this really is a hard moment for Peter in recognizing what has happened and breaks down. Starting at chapter 15, then we get where Jesus is more on trial, stating he is the King of the Jews, and there's the ruckus that is going on with that. They get asked if they, because it's the Passover, it's traditional for the Roman Empire to release someone. They ask if this is the person they want released. No, this is Barabbas that gets released. And they ask then, what do they want to have done? They ask for crucifixion of Jesus. They put a purple cloak on him and put a crown of thorns. Hail, King of the Jews. And they get where they have inscription put that this is the King of the Jews. They bring him to Golgotha. They basically are preparing him for death. And they crucify him and put him on the cross. We get Jesus then crying out, my God, why have you forsaken me? We get also that the curtain within the temple is torn. You get multiple people as he breathes his last, starting to question, truly, this was the Son of God. Then you have people who are gathering to then put him in the tomb, such as Joseph of Arimathea. But you also have Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of James, and Joseph and Solomon, who are kind of watching from a distance on what is going on. They have the preparation and is put in a tomb. And that is where they see where the body is laid. And that is all we get then out of Mark's gospel. So a lot there, a lot to go through. And especially a lot of times this is kind of how you'll end the service for this Sunday, because it's then allowing us to at least get a little bit of a taste of what this all is. So before we jump into how faith and science come together this week, we'll do a shameless plug for Working Preacher. If you have a general Working Preacher, I'd highly recommend it. Between the Sermon Brainwaves podcast, the commentaries, the discussions, since I'm not an ordained minister, I use them on a weekly basis to help give me some direction, some different ideas, along with going through the old different commentaries to help give some different thoughts and ideas, along with just a lot of great discussions going on over there. So if you haven't checked out workingpreacher.org, I'd highly recommend that. I'd also highly recommend checking out the Revised Common Lectionary coming from Vanderbilt's Divinity Library. I really enjoy how they lay out the text week to week and having all these different holidays, major and minor, right there and what the different texts are, along with art, prayers, hymns, devotions, a lot of great different things to get you prepared or something to bring into your practice if you're not necessarily up on some of the different things and you're wanting to figure out some different things to be reading. So if you haven't checked out the Revised Common Lectionary coming from Vanderbilt's Divinity Library, I'd highly recommend that. I'd also highly recommend checking out the Green Blades Preaching Roundtable and the Green Blades Rising Publication. These either weekly reflections or monthly newsletters are a great resource for hearing ecological echoes, implications, and urgencies that can be brought into your preaching, along with a lot of different ecological ideas. If you enjoy listening to me talk about faith and science for a half an hour each week, I know you're going to really enjoy looking and checking out some of these different things, such as they have like an eco-faith conference specifically geared for like the upper half of Minnesota. that's going on in Duluth the first weekend in April. But otherwise, there's a lot of other great information there. So if you haven't checked out Green Blades Preaching Roundtable and the Green Blades Rising Publications, just for some great information, I'd highly recommend that. That'll be the first link in the show notes. Finally, I have to also shout out the Gustavus Academy for Faith, Science, and Ethics. And this year, they are doing How and Why We Sleep, Revelations, and Rest, June 15th through the 21st, 2024 at Gustavus Adolphus College. It's geared for high school students. They're going to have some great, amazing people there. I am in talks to make sure that I am there. And again, I have this amazing discount code that's good through the end of April. That is EXTRZA24 to get $50 off your registration fee for joining the conference. I really enjoy it. It's a great place if you have any type of faith background and science knowledge and want to bring those together and you're a high school student. I highly recommend checking that out. And again, that will be linked in the show notes down below. A lot of texts, a lot of things to get through, but I think it is something that we can relate to. Because when you think about this week, you have Jesus entering as a king, Jesus entering as a war hero one day, and by the end of the week, Jesus is dead. And it's like, what happened? What went from look at what amazing thing of what Jesus is to death by the end of the week? And there has been, over the last 6 years, as we've gone through these texts, a lot of different ways and ideas to think about this. But I think one scientific thing that I know I haven't brought up before is pathological science. And what pathological science is when researchers find patterns in data where none exist, or they focus only on certain positive results. It's the process of where you're not necessarily trying to fraudulently put out data. It's that we're human and there's times that we mess up and we realize we overlook things or get stuck on things. And in doing that, it allows us to miss the overall picture. And so in that, I'm going to bring up a couple different examples. I'm going to link in the show notes a SciShow episode that goes through a few additional ideas on this subject. But I think there's a couple that are fairly easy for us to be able to talk about and discuss and be able to understand. And one of them starts in the late 1870s, where Giovanni Schiaparelli, who is a known astronomer of the day, starts looking at the equipment, the telescopes that we have at the time, and starts to wonder if it appears like there is canals on Mars, channels or canals. And from this, it kind of gets the press going. And what do they conclude? They conclude that there is Martian civilizations on Mars. And this is where Percival Lowell becomes a big supporter of this idea. So when people keep looking at these small smudges of what Mars is looking like, they continue to try graphing all these, and Lowell does a lot. He creates this big observatory down in Arizona and is putting out books every 10 years as he's continuing to put all these canals and look at their expanding. And what ended up happening? One of the big questions was from the beginning was it an optical illusion? Was this something that we were just seeing? And it was. We like having, when we have these smudges with white dots, we like connecting them in our mind. And so thus, how we are getting these straight lines. And this was confirmed by Mariner 4 in 1965, when we were able to get to the surface of Mars and take pictures, and there were no canals to be seen. Another one that is pretty interesting to talk about is polywater. It came out of the 1960s, and it was this idea that we were starting to notice that there was this weird form of liquid water, and so they was named polywater for short of polymerized water. It seemed denser and more viscous, so it was thicker and stickier. It was reacting different. It had a different freeze point and a different boiling point than normal water. It would become like glass when it got to the temperature of negative 34 degrees centigrade or 29.2 degrees Fahrenheit below zero. And it was something that they noticed initially in their initial reports in 1962 coming from the Soviets, condensing very small amounts of water vapor in small quartz glassware tubes, that they were getting this interesting Polly water. So this then created a frenzy. Why? Because it was easy to test for. It's water. And the worldwide stage in 1966 took this on. People became very concerned about this. Could this Polly water get out into the rest of the ecosystem and pollute it? And so we started having where different countries were trying to duplicate this. The US and the UK were able to do this. And in 1970 alone, there were over 100 papers studied on this particular topic. We were taking spectroscopy, where you're shooting light and looking at the wavelengths in which are reflected and absorbed. And we started to notice that this wasn't in the records of what had been done with this type of substance. It's a new material. They predicted the structure being honeycomb. They predicted that the quartz crystals were having some type of reaction to build into stronger chemical bonds than normal. Well, back in the 1962 paper, it mentioned the possibility of a sodium contamination. And in further investigation, they found that all these samples were having sodium, calcium, potassium, and chlorine were in all these samples. And what is that? Human sweat. In 1971, published paper talked about that there was probably sweat that was in the test tubes and thus kind of ended that whole thing. In 1989, we started getting the whole thing of cold fusion, this idea of sustained nuclear reaction at near room temperature, which would be a huge accomplishment instead of normally having to do fusion at 15 million degrees inside the sun. And it's the idea of taking two palladium metal electrodes and putting it in heavy water, which is water molecules has an extra neutron, and then running an electrical current in there. When doing that, the water molecules would break apart into the hydrogens becoming deuterium atoms, which would be absorbed by the palladium metal and thus being able to start this reaction. And what we were seeing from both the theory is that that would create this fusion without the high temperatures. And the results early on were we were getting some type of heat that was being measured at the reaction. And they were also looking at the byproduct saying, look, it's happening. But the problem was it was extremely inconsistent. The results weren't there. So by 1989, in a mere 5 weeks, we started to question if cold fusion could really be a thing. It's still being studied today, typically under the idea and the comments of low energy nuclear reactions. But again, there hasn't really been major progress with cold fusion in decades. And I think this reiterates so much for us as humans on how we get consumed in the moment. We get consumed in the moment. We want things now. We want things instantaneous, especially now more than ever. That we are so expectant of everything that we could potentially have. And when we get let down, it's amazing how quickly we move on to the next thing, or we're so excited about the possibility that sometimes we overlook some very simple things that we really should have been considering all along. I think of another one in a more recent last decade or so. The one that comes to mind for me is the Samsung Note 7. It was a phone that was super well advertised. It was really pumped up, especially within the cell phone enthusiast community. And early reviews of the phone were amazing, that this was what the enthusiasts were looking for. It was going to help bridge the gap for what the phablet was supposed to be, and people were super excited about it. And that's the phone, if you remember correctly, that started to catch on fire. And they had multiple cases where they had to recall all the phones. And thus, it was the one where Samsung phones were requested to be turned off on flights because they couldn't deal with that type of possibility of something like that happening. The whole cell phone business had a major setback for years coming out of that, as Samsung had to do a deep dive looking into what was going on, and it specifically with their battery technology that was possibly combusting in the flames and having to rebuild consumer confidence. But it was a major blow to a phone that people so looked forward to that then was taken away because of battery issues. Jesus gets welcomed into Jerusalem as this idea, as this king, as this very strong political person, whether Jesus was necessarily wanting to be that or not, and the tensions within the Roman government there and being in Jerusalem just in general made it a very high tension time. And especially as we go through this Holy Week, as we prepare for that with the Passion being read, I think it's good for us to remember, just like all these things, it was such a twist. There was so much optimism at the beginning of the week and so empowered and so excited that by the end of the week, they had turned. There was enough rabble rousing, if you want to put it, that they had gotten to the point where Jesus is put to death and killed, crucified. And I think this is one of those moments where we have to remember this within our science too. It's super exciting when we are having that, we feel like we have these discoveries. But again, it's why the discussion section is so important within a paper. It's so important to be able to talk about some potential things that potentially could still be going wrong and things that we need to do and how we need to keep being able to replicate this specifically out of this lab as well. We need to make sure that others are being able to see the same results. How often we are quick to jump the gun, and then how quick we are to be disappointed. Worried about polywater contaminating the environment. It's sweat in the water. It's been something that's been dealt with for centuries. Thinking about cold fusion and how it would totally revolutionize our whole energy grid. Yes, but we have to actually make sure it's not just theory, that we can actually see and have consistent results. We think about and get worried and dream about the possibility of having other intelligent life on Mars, and realize that sometimes our own brains are causing us to potentially see things that aren't actually there. We get excited to the point where we overlook things or take things for granted. And I think how Jesus multiple times is kind of calling people to absorb the moment and think about the moment and be conscientious of the moment, appreciate the people you're around. I think that's a big thing for us. It's so easy for us to jump ahead. It's so easy for us to look forward. It's so easy for us to get ahead of where we're at that we miss what is going on currently. We miss what potentially could be huge breakthroughs in our own lives. We miss life because we're so looking forward, or we're spending too much time looking back that we miss the present, the ultimate gift that we are given, and appreciating what we have been given. And I think as we are entering into Holy Week with this text of praise and reflection, I think it reminds us that, yes, there is celebration, but yes, we also need to appreciate that. Appreciating those birthdays, because we all only have so many and we don't know what that means. We don't know when that clock is going to strike out and that we have to go back to the dugout and it's over. We don't know when we're hanging up the cleats for the last time. We don't understand when things are the last time. For me, one of the things I've thought about, I don't know why it's been sticking with me so much, especially that I'm still a younger person, is the idea that there will become a day that I probably won't be able to jump anymore. And appreciating the ability to be able to do that, because someday I probably won't be able to. I think that's one of the things that we need to really do. And I think it leads us to the question for this week is, where do we need to appreciate life more? Because I think in that, when we are appreciating life, we can celebrate it. We can be excited about it, but we also then have to appreciate the moment of it. Where do we need to appreciate life more? I think we can look at that from people around us, from athletes and appreciating what they're able to do, to people who we work with, to relatives and family members being around, friends, being able to appreciate what our bodies can do at different stages of life, appreciating different stages of life, being single, married, having kids, being a parent, being a grandparent. They're all very different stages of life, and they're all worth being appreciated. Sometimes we look for patterns and we overlook things. And I think that's where it's important for us to stop and reflect and be critical, but also enjoy where we're at. Enjoy the confusion. Enjoy the breakthrough that may or may not be the breakthrough. Celebrate. Enjoy life and think about that. Because we don't know when all of this ends. And we don't know what's next. And so I think that's where it's important for us to reflect. Because without it, what are we? Because I think then we're missing out on major parts of life, and it causes us sometimes to do scientific discoveries that aren't actually discoveries. So we'll wrap this up as we always do. I pray God blesses you through your faith and amazes you through science.